with you. She looked at him helplessly, knowing that she really ought to call Debbie Gehring, or feeling that she was being shamelessly manipulated by her 4-year-old son. And if she gave in, it would be for all the wrong reasons. She thought helplessly, it's like a chain reaction that doesn't stop any place, and it's gumming up works I didn't even know existed. Oh, God, I wish I was in Tahiti. She opened her mouth to tell him quite firmly and once and for all that she was going to call Debbie, and they could make popcorn together if he was good, and that he would have to go to bed right after supper if he was bad, and that was the end of it. Instead, what came out was, all right, you can come, but our pinto might not make it, and if it doesn't, we'll have to walk to a house and have the town taxi come and pick us up. And if we do have to walk, I don't want to have to listen to you crabbing at me, Ted Trenton.
No, I won't.
Let me finish. I don't want you crabbing at me or asking me to carry you, because I won't do it. Do we have an understanding?
Yeah, sure.
Tad hopped off the sofa, all grief forgotten.
Are we going now?
Yes, I guess so. Or, I know what. Why don't I make us a snack first? A snack, and we'll put some milk in the thermos bottles, too.
In case we have to camp out all night?
Tad looked suddenly doubtful again.
No, honey.
She smiled and gave him a little hug. But I still haven't been able to get Mr. Camber on the telephone. Your daddy says it's probably just because he doesn't have a phone in his garage, so he doesn't know I'm calling. And his wife and his little boy might be someplace, so...
He should have a phone in his garage, Tad said. That's dumb.
Just don't you tell him that, Donna said quickly. And Tad shook his head that he wouldn't. Anyway, if nobody's there, I thought you and I could have a little snack in the car, or maybe on his steps and wait for him. Tad clapped his hands.
Great. Can I take my Snoopy lunchbox?
Sure, Donna said, giving in completely. She found a box of Keebler fig bars and a couple of Slim Jims. Donna thought they were hideous things, but they were Tad's all-time favorite snack. She wrapped some green olives and cucumber slices in foil. She filled Tad's thermos with milk and half-filled Vic's big thermos, the one he took on camping trips. For some reason, looking at the food made her uneasy. She looked at the phone and thought about trying Joe Camber's number again. Then she decided there was no sense in it, since they would be going out there either way. Then she thought of asking Tad again if he wouldn't rather she called Debbie Gehringer, and then wondered what was wrong with her. Tad had made himself perfectly clear on that point. It was just that suddenly she didn't feel good, not good at all. It was nothing she could put her finger on. She looked around the kitchen as if expecting the source of her unease to announce itself. It didn't.
We going, Mom?
Yes, she said absently. There was a note-minder on the wall by the fridge, and on this she scrawled, Tad and I have gone out to Jake Camber's garage with Pinto. Back soon. Ready, Tad?
Sure, he grinned. Who's the note for, Mom?
Oh, Joni might drop by with those raspberries, she said vaguely. Or maybe Allison McKenzie. She was going to show me some Amway and Avon stuff.
Oh.
Donna ruffled his hair, and they went out together. The heat hit them like a hammer wrapped in pillows. Buggerly car probably won't even start, she thought. But it did. It was 3:45 p.m. They drove southeast along Route 117 toward the Maple Sugar Road, which was about 5 miles out of town. The Pinto behaved in exemplary fashion, and if it hadn't been for the bout of snaps and jerks coming home from the shopping trip, Donna would have wondered what she had bothered making such a fuss about. But there had been that bout of the shakes, and so she drove sitting bolt upright again, going no faster than 40, pulling as far to the right as she could when the car came up behind her. And there was a lot of traffic on the road. The summer influx of tourists and vacationers had begun. The Pinto had no air conditioning, so they rode with both windows open. A Continental with New York plates, towing a gigantic trailer with two mopeds on the back, swung around them on a blind curve, the driver bleeding his horn. The driver's wife, a fat woman wearing mirror sunglasses, looked at Donna and Tad with imperious contempt.
Get stuffed, Donna yelled and popped her middle finger up at the fat lady.
The fat lady turned away quickly. Tad was looking at his mother just a little nervously, and Donna smiled at him.
No hassle, big guy. We're going good. Just out-of-state fools.
Oh, Tad said cautiously. Listen to me, she thought. The big Yankee. Vic would be proud.
She had to grin at herself because everyone in Maine understood that if you moved here from another place, you would be an out-of-stater until you were sent down in your grave. And on your tombstone they would write something like, Harry Jones, Castle Corners, Maine, originally from Omaha, Nebraska. Most of the tourists were headed toward 302, where they would turn east to Naples or west toward Bridgeton, Freiburg, and North Conway, New Hampshire, with its alpine slides, cut-rate amusement parks, and tax-free restaurants. Donna and Tad were not going up to the 302 junction. Although their home overlooked downtown Castle Rock and its picture-book town common, woods had closed in on both sides of the road before they were 5 miles from their own front door. These woods drew back occasionally, a little, to show a lot with a house or a trailer on it. And as they went farther out, the houses were more often of the type that her father had called shanty Irish. The sun still shone brightly down, and there was a good 4 hours of daylight left, but the emptiness made her feel uneasy again. It was not so bad here on 117, but once they left the main road, their turnoff was marked with a sign saying Maple Sugar Road in faded, almost unreadable letters. It had been splintered considerably by kids banging away with 22s and birdshot. This road was two-lane blacktop, bumpy and frost-heaved. It wound past two or three not-so-nice houses, and one old and shabby Road King trailer sitting on a crumbling concrete foundation. There was a yard full of weeds in front of the trailer. Donna could see cheap-looking plastic toys in the weeds. A sign, nailed askew to a tree at the head of the driveway, read, Free Kittens. A pot-bellied kid of maybe two stood in the driveway, his sopping pamper hanging below his tiny penis. His mouth hung open, and he was picking his nose with one finger and his navel with another. Looking at him, Donna felt a helpless chill of goose flesh. Stop it, for Christ's sake, what's wrong with you? The woods closed in around them again. An old 68 Ford Fairlane with a lot of rusty red primer paint on the hood and around the headlights passed them going the other way. A young kid with a lot of hair was slouched nonchalantly behind the wheel. He wasn't wearing a shirt. The Fairlane was doing maybe 80. Donna winced. It was the only traffic they saw. The Maple Sugar Road climbed steadily, and when they passed the occasional field or large garden, they were afforded a stunning view of western Maine toward Bridgeton and Freiburg. Long Lake glittered in the farthest distance like the sapphire pendant of a fabulously rich woman. They were climbing another long slope up one of these eroded hills. As advertised, the sides of the road were now lined with dusty, heat-drooping maples, when the pinto began to buck and jolt again. Donna's breath clogged in her throat, and she thought, Oh, come on, you cruddy little car, come on. Tad shifted uneasily in the passenger bucket and held onto his Snoopy lunchbox a little tighter. She began to tap the accelerator lightly, her mind repeating the same words over and over like an inarticulate prayer. Come on, come on, come on. Mommy, is it... Hush, Tad. The jerking grew worse. She pressed the gas pedal harder in frustration, and the pinto squirted ahead, the engine smoothing out once more. Yay, Tad said, so suddenly and loudly that she jumped. We're not there yet, Tadder. A mile farther along, they came to an intersection marked with another wooden sign, this one reading, Town Road Number 3. Donna turned in, feeling triumphant. As well as she remembered, Camber's place was less than a mile and a half from here. If the pinto gave up the ghost now, she and Tad could angle it. They passed a ramshackle house with a station wagon and a big old rusty white car in the driveway. In her rearview mirror, Donna noticed that the honeysuckle had really gone crazy on the side of the house that would catch most of the sun. A field opened up on their left after they passed the house, and the pinto began to climb a long, steep hill. Halfway up, the little car began to labor again. This time it was jerking harder than it ever had before. Will it get up, Mommy? Yes, she said grimly. The pinto's speedometer needle dropped from 40 to 30. She dropped the transmission selector lever from drive into the lower range, thinking vaguely that it might help compression or something. Instead, the pinto began to buck worse than ever. A fusillade of backfires roared through the exhaust pipe, making Tad cry out. Now they were down to fast running speed, but she could see the Camber house and the red barn that served as his garage. End of side 4. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.